Right now at the Home Depot, you'll save up to 35% off appliance special buys, like a GE appliance's top load washer and dryer pair. With deep clean and deep rinse options, a reliable heavy-duty agitator, and four precise water levels, just $4.78 each. Wash, dry, save, repeat. Today is the day for doing. With Spring Black Friday savings, now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only while supplies last. Gas, dryer, extra, see store for details, valid through April 17th.
Welcome, everyone, to Creating a Family, talk about adoption and infertility. Today, we're going to be talking about a really important topic, adopting or fostering a child that identifies as LGBTQ. Here's a sample of what you're going to hear.
Your sexual orientation is an immutable state. It is what it is, and no amount of abuse can switch it. It can confuse you. It can make sex very confusing. It can mess with identity. But in the long run, your orientation just is what it is.
This show is brought to you by Creating a Family. We are the National Adoption and Foster Care Education and Support Nonprofit. I'm Dawn Davenport. I am your host and the director of Creating a Family. You can find us and all of our resources online at creatingafamily.com. The Creating a Family show is underwritten by the Jockey Being Family Foundation. Their mission is to strengthen adoptive families through post-adoption services. As their founder, Deborah Waller, who's chairman and CEO of Jockey International, says, one failed adoption is one too many. And I say amen to that. You can support Jockey Being Family's mission by buying a bear or a blanket at their website, jockeybeingfamily.com. And we thank them for their support. This show, as well as all the resources provided by Creating a Family, could not and would not happen without the generous support of our partners who believe in our mission of providing unbiased education and support to those struggling to create a family. One of our partners is Children's Connection, Inc. They are an adoption agency providing services for domestic infant adoption and embryo donation and adoption throughout the U.S., as well as providing home studies and post-adoption support to families in Texas. Today, we're going to be talking about parenting a child through adoption or foster care that identifies as LGBTQ. This is a really important topic, and it is a topic that is directly relevant to foster care as well as adopting older children. We have a harder time finding families, either foster or adoption, for children who identify as LGBTQ. And it's important to understand why. It's also important to understand how best to parent these children, to raise them into healthy, happy adults. Our guest to talk about this topic is Mark LaCava. He is clinical director of the Modern Family Center at Spence Chapin Services to Families and Children. Welcome, Mark, to Creating a Family. We so appreciate your expertise. Let me jump by giving some stats. There are approximately 175,000 youth ages 10 to 18 in foster care in the United States. I don't have a statistic of how many of families that have adopted those children, but some estimates say that anywhere from 5 to 10%, or quite frankly, more likely more, are a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer, or questioning. Are sexually nonconforming kids and youth more likely to end up in foster care? Mark, have you seen any stats on that?
I don't have any stats presently, but the former stats, because so much has changed in the way that we think about LGBTQ youth and the whole community as a whole. It's much more accepted. There's much more tolerance than there was, I would say, even 10 years ago. When I started off working in foster care back in 1989, we would teach, and that was considered quite liberal, that if the child did identify as gay, we would tell the child to keep it to themselves, if the home was safe, and if the home was safe, that a safe home was better than no home at all. And, you know, when we look back at these policies, we think, my goodness, what message were we sending these kids that, you know, to keep you know, keep major parts of themselves hidden? But now many, you know, kids feel more comfortable coming out. Kids are coming out earlier. When I worked in the group home, in the group homes, it, you know, I could even see that change where the kids who did identify as LGBTQ would come out, if they did come out, at a later date, 16 years old, 17 years old. But we know that they came into the group homes as LGBTQ. They just kept it to themselves. Now,
well, I think a lot of times a child,
it's easier to come out at 13 or 14. Yes. And
yeah.
And the staff would have, you know, that's part of staff training now, and a big part of it is to be able to accept these kids for who they are sooner than later. So, and that also would mean the staff, and I guess one of the things that we could talk about here is looking at our own views. It's no longer good enough to say love the sinner, hate the sin, or I could be tolerant, because what we're really asking staff to be and what we're asking foster parents and adoptive parents is you have to be more than tolerant. You have to be accepting.
Right, and that's and knowledgeable. So that's
and,
one of the
course,
things that we're going to be talking about, exactly. I feel like we ought to start by saying that LGBTQ youth are more like other kids in foster care than not alike. And they have experienced the trauma of abuse and neglect and removal from their family of origin, or, in their case, perhaps being kicked out of their family of origin. So they need much of the same things as all kids do: unconditional love, a safe place to process their feelings of grief and loss, and freedom to express who they are, and structure and rules to support them in becoming responsible, healthy adults. So I don't want this interview to be reflective of only the differences, because, in fact, in many ways, kids are kids, and youth are youth, and children who have experienced trauma have many of the same issues and same needs. So I think we'll start with that as our grounding. We've talked about cultural sensitivity. You were mentioning that's one of the things that is now the push when we're training foster parents and adoptive parents. So cultural sensitivity begins with language. So what are some – I think that sometimes if you're not – specifically familiar with the LGBTQ community, the language can trip us up. So I think we all know what the L stands for, lesbian, G stands for gay, B stands for bisexual, T stands for transgender or trans, and the Q, honestly, I hear it both ways, queer and questioning. What's the preferred term?
You know what? The language changed so quickly. I just was at a training 2 months ago at NYU University, and I would say in their Institute of Gender Identity, I would say that you could use it either way, queer or questioning, because part of society now, that's a huge piece where many kids question, and then they can go back to there's so much more fluidity in sexuality than there ever was before. So I'm going to say you can't to err on the part of questioning.
Okay, excellent. I'll have to change because I've for so long thought of it as queer. I need to change. But there is a great deal more of a freedom, I think, for kids to question and fluidity. So that kind of raises the issue of at what age do most kids report knowing that they are attracted to someone of the same sex? I read in a report by the Family Acceptance Project that's around age 10. Have you seen similar data, Mark?
I think the research coming out now is much younger, that if kids identify, if they have language, they know at a very, very young age, really at 3. They might not know how to put words to it.
Right.
They might, but they know who holds special places for them, who they want to be best friends with. But because we don't have much language, but the language is developing for kids much younger, We pretty much know that by it's an, and I'm sure if Dr. Ryan was here, she'd be able to confirm this, that it's set even before 3. I'm trying to look for some of my stats here. But, yeah, 10, we feel more comfortable, I mean, with a 10-year-old, but it's the child will know. You'll see, and many parents, they'll see it in their behavior. And will, you know, preference for toys, you know, and it's more than just, it's not that your boy is going to be feminine necessarily or your girl masculine. It's a level of sensitivity. It's a way of looking at the world. It's a way of behaving. It's a way of processing. It's so many things, and it's sexuality.
And so our identity, the very identity, your sexual identity, is the research now is indicating then, we can't say from birth because we can't test children for that, but certainly at a toddler age, there is evidence which would indicate that children are identifying and they are letting their parents know much earlier just because there's more acceptance and more language associated with that. As far as
And more research. If you were to bring your child to a clinic, they would be giving you this information. It would not be odd for you. It would not be odd for them. And as I'm talking to you, Dawn, I'm going through some of my research here, and as we talk, but it comes out at a pretty much younger age. Birth, sex, gender, role, identity. It all really kind of comes together at a certain, as we develop, but it's set at a very early age.
So for parents who are getting ready to adopt, they may or foster, they may or may not know, but the identity has likely already been set. That raises the question, is can sexual identity change? If we talked about fluidity, can it be changed or can it change? And I perceive those as
yes.
different questions.
I think that's where some of the confusion, your sexual orientation is your sexual orientation, meaning if you're attracted to men, you're attracted to men. If you're attracted to women, you're attracted to women. If you're attracted to both sexes, that's kind of set, and I'm looking at that set maybe at around 5 to 7 years, 8 years old. But identity, that's how you choose to identify yourself. I could be gay or straight, I'll make it easier. Well, I'll say that I'm gay. I mean, I am gay, but I identify as straight. I'm gay internally. I could be married. I might even have children, but I know that I'm much more attracted to men. My sexual orientation is toward men of the opposite sex. This is part of this fluidity. Not everybody is 100%, most people aren't 100% one thing, and the mind is a very strong thing, but you can't change, Dawn, your sexual orientation. You are who you are. How you choose to act on it, that's the choice. And that's where I think a lot of confusion comes in.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Here is a question. I'm not going to, she asked me not to use her name. She said, my son, age 14, and adopted from foster care at 10, has come out of the closet. We love him dearly and accept him completely, but I feel such anger at his bio mom. She abused him, and I can't help but wondering if that is why he is gay. Let me stop for a second and say that to Anon. In fact, your feelings of anger towards the birth parent who abused your child are a common feeling that other foster and adoptive families often feel. And we at Creating a Family have a considerable number of resources to talk about just that, to what to do with those feelings, how to express them, how not to express them, that type of thing. So you can get that information at creatingafamily.org, and you can go to either our adoption A to Z resource page or our foster A to Z resource page and find help with that specific question. However, I think that kind of in some way begs a bigger question that she is asking, and that is, can abuse, she is, it sounds like, attributing her son's gayness to the fact that he was abused by his mother. So talk to me some about that, Mark, as far as how that is that something that we do see? How does that play out?
I definitely understand this foster mother, adoptive mother's empathy and strong sense of love for the child, but it has nothing to do with his abuse. It might come out in some type of sexualized behavior, but it certainly would not play a role on his orientation. That's kind of like the Dawn, the old school thought where a controlling mother can make a gay son, a distant father. It has no bearing on it at all. It's much more biological with other switches that have to turn on and on. As I go through some of, as I'm thinking back, your sexual orientation is an immutable state. It is what it is, and no amount of abuse can switch it. It can confuse you. It can make sex very confusing. It can mess with identity. But in the long run, your orientation just is what it is. And if you allow it, if you allow yourself to be you, it will just naturally come out because it's there. It's always present. So, ma'am, there might be a lot of abuse that's triggered trauma for this child and some other issues for him, but it's not his orientation. That's something that you will need to kind of accept him wholly on that, because love is love in this particular thing.
Exactly.
You love him if he's straight, you love him if he's gay, but that gayness did not come from trauma.
Are LGBTQ youth more likely than other youth to have mental health issues?
Yes and no, and I'll say that the mental health issues come from the stress of hiding, of being gay, of being different in a culture, especially if you live in a place that is not very open. That could create depression. That could create, when we see that there's a higher rate of self-injury. It comes from society on the out, not that the child themselves is more prone to have a mental illness like bipolar or depression. It's all those stressors that add to them at such a young age that they can't handle. That holding in this big secret, if they find out who I am, oh my God, they might kick me out of the house. They might beat me up at school. They'll spit on me. They'll make fun of me.
And that does happen. So, I mean, it's real. Mm-hmm. These fears, it does happen.
That's right. That's the yes and the no part. It's not that they're more prone to mental illness. It's that they're more prone to mental ill symptoms because of the outside society and the stressors. You take away those stressors, you give them supports, depending on how depressed they are, some good therapy, they'll be perfectly fine. And it won't be an issue going forward. It's not like you would suffer lifelong. If you accept yourself, when you have a community that accepts you, these symptoms will be alleviated.
So, all right, we know that LGBTQ youth have higher rates of anxiety, depression, and studies. Yeah, no, go
and
ahead.
If I can cut you off, Dawn, because we're talking about foster care and adoption, if you, the parent, and your family accept your child, you're not going to have those issues nearly as much. It's only when the child doesn't even feel accepted within their own home, when they feel frightened or anxious or fearful that if they were to reveal their self, that their parents would reject them. It's especially kids in foster care or kids who are older kids to be adopted, because they felt this rejection. They felt the sense of abandonment is very real, and it might not even been around their sexuality, although it could be. They could have been kicked out because they identified as LGBTQ, or they couldn't hide it. Their mannerisms were just too pronounced. But that does not mean that they have an inner mental illness. Remember the DS, that was knocked out of the DSM back in the early 70s, 72 or 73.
Yeah, exactly.
Accept them and you will not see the high suicide rates. I mean, youth can definitely look those up online, but the more accepted a youth feels, the much less they're going to attempt or think about harming themselves.
And you have to wonder that a child who is in foster care or available for adoption. If they don't have to, children have a tendency to internalize and blame themselves for any number of things that are happening in their lives that really have absolutely nothing to do with them. But that's not how they perceive, as a self-centered being, they perceive things as themselves as being the cause thereof. And so you have to wonder if a child who is in foster care can't wonder if somehow their gayness, their differentness, is part of what caused them to be there. And so that's got to just add, you know, further complications and anxiety and depression in their lives as well. And then, sadly, sometimes that is the cause, and sometimes, quite frankly, it has absolutely nothing to do with it. It's problems in their with their family and their inabilities. But
absolutely.
Nonetheless, sometimes it does, yeah.
Right. We take on anything that we, I mean, kids, especially in foster care, take on whatever they perceive as negative as coming from them. If I wasn't bad, they wouldn't have removed me from the home, regardless.
Right.
If you didn't call social services, this would have never happened. They can't process the fact that this was out of their control. I don't understand why I feel this way about Jimmy or Helen. I must be bad. That's what we call the internalized homophobia. It's inside of you, and it gets exasperated.
My dad wouldn't have beat the ever-loving out of me if I didn't act this way or I didn't feel this way. Right. So, and it was because of me that Dad beat me, and because Dad beat me, then the whole family got disrupted. So not only me, but my sisters and brothers have been removed. And yes, so I think as parents, we need to know that internalized blame is something that may be there, whether or not the child expresses it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is, another, because then there's also the other piece of, if I only, God didn't see me. God must not love me. God sees this sin, and, he's marked me. All this plays on it, too. So if you're thinking of it, you also have to take in your religious beliefs. How, could they be accepting? Are they accepting? Because to take in a child and then to not be able to really be able for that child to express themselves, you're setting both of you up for struggles, for another way of hiding. Can I really love Miss Jones, but I have to hide this from her because I don't want her to reject me also. This is a good home. But what it's telling the child is you're still not good enough.
Mm-hmm. You have to hide. You can't be yourself and be loved.
I can't really be myself. And that's what takes a lot of energy. And that's the energy that could be used for school, could be used for sports, could be used for developing other parts of what they need to develop, their brain growth and self-esteem and friendships and things of this.
And there is some evidence that some research that has shown that LGBTQ youth and young adults have a higher incidence of alcohol and drug abuse. I'm assuming that would fall directly into self-medicating for anxiety, depression, and lack of acceptance. Have you seen the same research?
Yes. It's because you're falling into the outsider category. Mm-hmm. Who do I associate with? I must be bad. Let me socialize with the kids that are kind of stuck, aren't going anyplace. I'm not going anyplace. I'm really unlovable. How am I going to, be able to, I can't even be me, but I can definitely be this. The easiest thing to do is to reach for, to get high, to do this. I can kind of fit in and numb myself. Nothing is expected of me except just to be a partier and that type of thing. So, yes, and also to numb the pain. This is because, I'm confronted with this daily. This is who I am, and I have to suppress it. I have to hold it in. That's a big chore to ask a young person to do.
Oh, it's a big chore to ask anybody to do, but
anybody to do, right.
Yeah, but particularly someone who hasn't developed some of the coping skills for faking it type of thing. Yeah, absolutely. So from a parent's standpoint, you said that if that the more acceptance a child feels at home, the less likely they are to have some of the associated mental health issues such as depression, anxiety, as well as substance abuse. So what does acceptance look like? Because plenty of parents would say, oh, yeah, I'm not prejudiced. I'm not homophobic. I'm fine. This is not an issue. And yet their child may not perceive it the same way. What does acceptance look like from a child's standpoint or a youth standpoint?
I would say you don't foster or adopt in a box. It's a family event. How does your family feel about it? Or even if they don't know, do they make comments? Oh, he's such a fag. Or, oh, what if, you know, whatever, they're watching the game and they make derogatory. And if you as the parent don't say something, it's telling the kids that, well, you know what, this player's a little bit less than, this person's a little bit less than, this person's a little bit less of a man, less, you know, more, whatever it is. If you're making, oh, look how muscular she is, she must be, and you don't say anything, why would the child not perceive that you feel the same way?
Do you recommend that families tell their extended family, particularly if they're concerned? Obviously, if they have no concern about the acceptance, there would be no reason not to. But if they're concerned that their extended family will not be as accepting, what do you recommend for families to do, adoptive and foster parents to do?
They talk with their families. This is really all about this, you know, my family's identity. We're very accepting. We can't say that my extended family can be as accepting, but they need to know that certain types of talk aren't acceptable for us because this is my family. You're bringing this child in to your family, especially in adoption. Mm-hmm. What is the culture of my family? Is the culture of my family is it's okay to be gay, but let's just keep it in our four walls? That's still that negative message. I can't change the grandparents are going to think, but I do know that research shows us that when grandparents accept kids, be them, transracial families, LGBT, that the kids feel better about themselves. They feel more accepted in the family. So you might have to make, and that looks like you have to educate your family. You have to be able to tell them, I can't change how you feel about this, but when we're over for holiday dinners, these are certain things that I can't accept.
Mm-hmm. This is your child, and you are the parent, and you have to protect that child. And even if that protection means protecting them from someone you love, your parent or your extended family, you are the parent.
Absolutely.
It's your job to protect that child. It would be the same if it was different in many ways, but similarities. If you were a white parent having adopted a black child and your racist father uses the N-word, well, you would not put up with that, and it would be similar. You cannot put up with any of the other foul language that is, it's harder with some of the more subtle things. But then you may have to protect your child from being around that person.
And by doing that, you're helping them have language for when people say to them, you know, you're this, you're that, because really what a lot of this is you're lesser than. If you're LGBTQ, mm-hmm. you're lesser than. You deserve less rights in this society. You deserve more discrimination. You brought this upon yourself, which we know. It's irrefutable now. This is not a choice. This is who you are at a very, very, very early age.
Mm-hmm. There's some fascinating research on that the inner uterine environment and how that and your position in the family order, so what could also impact your sexual orientation, or there's some research that would indicate that likely because of the hormonal changes that have taken place within the mom through subsequent or previous pregnancies. I just find that it's my
Oh, absolutely.
Home.
Absolutely. If you're, I think some sex and orientation comes out somewhere within the first 3 months. And if the uterine is flushed with a certain amount of testosterone, not enough. This is where this all starts to begin, in utero.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right about the science. This now, genes versus behavior. There's always this
nature
little mix up.
Right,
but we're leaning more. I mean, nature is nature. You can't nurture it out of a child. So, you know, if you just have to toughen him up or feminine, it's not going to do any good.
You're just going to be creating a child who is miserable.
Yes.
Another thing for parents to do is to create a home that is accepting of all types of diversity and does not tolerate discrimination based on race, religion, sex, or sexual orientation. That's almost the core and the basis of what we do. To create, and I would say that all parents should be doing that, but certainly parents who are fostering or adopting or think that there's a possibility that this child might be somewhere on the LGBTQ spectrum.
Absolutely, because, once again, when we're talking about identity, we're talking about self-esteem. Who are my friends? Can I invite my friends over? You know, part of adolescence is dating. Do I want my child to have this developmental stage so that going forward their ability to be in a stable relation is easier because they've already gone through some of it in search for like identity in adolescence? I want to date so-and-so. We get in an argument. It doesn't work. I date this person. But if I can't date because you're not comfortable with my sexuality, it puts that on hold and it kind of retards that rather large part of social development. Can I bring my friends over? People might not know or see that I'm LGBTQ, but when I bring Joni over and, you know, she's has short hair and ex whatever, and people can see, they're going to question me, they're going to question our family. Do you feel, can I bring her over? Do you feel comfortable with it? This message is, I'm fine with who you are, but let's not bring in, I don't want you to get into any danger. I don't want people to pick on you. I think, so try to fit in as much as possible. That's kind of, the message you're giving them is, I love you, but, you have to keep this hidden. So then I'm asking myself as a youth, well, then how much do you really love me?
And another thing that I think that trips people up is that, it's something that you mentioned, that although I will say that I think that the current generation of high school and college age date less, or that's my experience as a mother of kids in that age group, they tend to date less than previous generations. They do more in groups. However, if we want our children to have experiences, romantic experiences, while they are still at home or in their younger ages, where we are around to help pick up the pieces and nurture a broken heart and talk about healthy love and healthy sexual relationships and healthy everything, if we want our children to have that, we need to have age-appropriate expectations for their relationships. And it doesn't change if their relationship is with someone of their same gender or if it's with someone who is of the opposite gender. So it's okay to set rules and say, no, we're not going to, we don't date at 15, and this is not because our 14, because this is not because you're dating a girl. It's because that's too young.
That's
you can invite your friend over.
That's the culture of our house. Yeah, that's what we, but what you also mentioned on, which was beautiful, is, mending a broken heart. That's that continual bonding process that I can trust you to be there for me no matter what. It's a, there's a level of, I'm upset because so-and-so broke up with me or so-and-so doesn't like me. Come on over here, honey. There's going to be people like that or too bad they didn't get. But all that makes the child feel safe. That builds self-esteem, and that builds this bonding, this connection. Bonding is what you're doing to your child with that, but attaching is what your child's doing to them. It's unconditional love.
Mm-hmm. We used to call that with mine. It's a Ben and Jerry's night. Oh, this is definitely a Ben and Jerry's night. We're going to sit around and just be miserable together because you deserve better, and they don't know what they're losing, and all the things that you need somebody to be on your side, even if it's your fault that you broke up. But that doesn't matter. You need somebody.
Or it's
on
a silly
your
reason,
side.
Whatever. But that's why, and they're the moments that, of course, will make us feel good because our child still needs us.
Yeah, that's true. And when they're 16 and 17, quite frankly, we're looking for those moments because they know everything and they don't need us. That's our, so they say. Another thought would be our society is so gender typical or gender stereotypical. Football is for boys. Ballet is for girls. And so many other, you know, fashion is for girls. I think girls perhaps have a little more leeway than do boys in our society. But allowing our youth to participate in activities that interest them, regardless of whether they are stereotypical activities for male or female. And that's a challenge for a lot of parents, because it's open. I mean, it's so public, and they're afraid of being judged. You know, why are you letting your son, participate in a fashion show? That's going to, you're encouraging this, that type of thing. But what message is that sending to a youth if we don't let them?
It's the same when you're thinking about adopting or fostering LGBTQ, to start this off, what you said at the very beginning, they're no different than any other child. So why would you hinder their interests? Why would you thwart their interests? If your child had special gifts in basketball, would you say, I don't really want them to play basketball for these different reasons? You would encourage them because that's, and we know that when a kid's interested in something, it builds self-esteem. It makes them feel good about themselves. We want kids to explore stuff. So if you're falling into that role, that's a place where you're going to have to look at yourself and say, can I do this? Or why do I feel this way? Why do I feel that this child has to conform to society? Do I conform to society and everything? And if I do, how's that been for me? Has that been putting stress on me? And if you can ask these questions of yourself, then you might not be the right person to foster or adopt, and that's your choice. That's where a choice definitely comes in. If you swear this isn't the way you think, or it might not be the right choice for you, so don't stress yourself out. And don't stress this other child, someone that you're bringing into your home who's coming in with the idea that you're going to be, every child goes into a home hoping, even the most hardened older adult, that maybe this person will see me. And if they see me, maybe they'll love me. But you have to be open to loving that child, whoever that child is. And if there's preconceived notions of who you can love, which is your right to choose, you need to let your home finder know, you need to let the agency know, and then they'll handle it. They might say, well, you know what, you're not the right type of foster parent for us, there might be another agency, or we won't match you with these type of kids. But don't twist yourself into a pretzel for something that you can't do. You're kind of not doing anybody a favor.
But I think the ones who perhaps struggle the most, it's one thing if it's a decision you make as a foster parent or an adoptive parent. A child is presented to you that either has already identified as LGBTQ or is there are indications that the caseworker or social worker suspects the child might. And that's one thing from a parent standpoint, because then they're choosing it. But oftentimes, this is not a choice that a parents make. They adopt a younger child or even a child from infancy. And let's be perfectly honest, it can also be just as likely a child from birth. It's not significantly different. So the parent is then having to make adjustments. This is not a choice that the parent made. This is a situation that's presented. But I would say then, what would you be doing if this child was born to you? And that's just as likely. So how would you parent that child?
If it's an issue for you, then you would get educated on it. If we're going to adopt, at our particular agency, a child that has really high special needs, we ask the parent to do some research on it, to go to a home where this particular child's disability can be seen and viewed so that you have an idea if you can do it. If you already have a child and they, you know, identify as LGBT or trans, you as the parent, you have to educate yourself on it, because only education, meeting other parents who are parenting LGBTQ youth, joining groups, that will help you. We become a family for life. We don't become a family part-time. And things are thrown at us all the time. And in the grand scheme of things, having your child's sexual orientation different than what you expected is in the universe, it's as big as you allow it to be. Your child isn't disabled so that they'll never leave the home. Your child's not that you're going to have to give them 24-hour care. You're just going to have to parent them a little bit differently or not. And that not is, I accept my child. They're going to be dating, you know, so-and-so. I'm okay with that. If I struggle with it, then I have to find a way to be okay with it, because that's my child. That's like the child saying, you know what, I don't really want to be parented by a blonde-haired woman. I'm sorry, just something about blonde hair. Can she please change her hair color brown? I think I could love her a lot more. I think this would be easier. It doesn't happen that way.
Mm-hmm. You are listening to an interview with Creating a Family. We are talking today about parenting a child that identifies as LGBTQ. We are talking with Mark LaCava. He is the clinical director of the Modern Family Center at Spence Chapin Services to Families and Children. One of the things that we talked at the very beginning, Mark, about is that the Q is for questioning, and we both commented that there's a lot more, I think our society allows a lot more fluidity. I think it probably always existed. It just had to be squelched down because the society didn't accept it. But now there is more accepting. But I think that the questioning is sometimes hard for parents because they either, one, don't want to influence the child, or two, deep down they really do want to influence the child. And often their desire to influence the child is based on love, because they feel like this would be an easier life choice for the child. So let's talk a little about parenting a child who is, let me change and not say child, let me say youth, because I think a lot of tweens are, and I think our society accepts a lot of teens questioning, but by the tweens questioning, you know, the pre-teenagers. But once they get into those teen years, there is an expectation that they know their sexual orientation. So how can parents be supportive of a child who is falling in the queue and is not sure, and is perhaps bisexual and attracted to both? Thoughts on that?
I would say really to let your child know that you're okay with it. This is something that only they can kind of sort through. I mean, back, you know, a generation or so before, you could say, oh, you know, you'll grow out of it. This is a struggle, but don't worry about it, kind of minimalizing it, kind of sending unconscious messages that you would really prefer that they would fit, you know, more easily into society. But once again, you're going to be who you're going to be, whether you wish, pray, hope, or whatever. It's you're set for that. So the message that a parent can really give is, I love you unconditionally. I wish you weren't going through this. If it's problematic for you, I know that it might give you problems at school. I know it might be confusing. You know, home is a safe place for you, but you're going to figure this out, honey. And if you need me to talk about it, I'm here for you. Because the more open your child can be with you, the less stressful this is. If I can talk to my parent about this, boy, I'm a lucky person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a hard topic to talk about because it does involve topics that kids don't want to talk about their parents with, sex and romantic feelings. And so I think we as parents have to go out of our way to let our kids know that we aren't going to be shocked, and we are available, and that we love them, and that we are on team them, whatever them might be.
All right, and it might, you know, I'm from New York City here, But if you're from a small town somewhere else, a parent might not have contact might be more difficult. But, you know, one of the beauties is there's so much on the Internet now. You can hear other parents talk about it. You can join groups and hook up with people throughout that are going through the same thing that you're going to throughout the nation, so that when you're ready, you can, you know, you, because in a way, sometimes a parent might have to come out with their child. I love my LGBTQ youth. I love my gay son. I love my gay daughter. I love my trans son. Whatever it is, it might there might be a process for you also. And previously, you might be isolated. You might really be thinking and knowing all these things in your heart, but there's no one for you to talk to about it or process, because maybe your minister isn't going to be able to give you what you need. But you can get this information online. You can join these groups online. You can call up call centers where there, you know, where you can get the support that you need as a parent to help you process all this, so that you can be the parent that you want to be.
And there are support groups available national. It depends on, you're very right that it absolutely depends on where you live as to the availability of them. But PFLAG is a national group that has, oh gosh, something like 400 chapters and parents and friends of lesbians and gays. But that's a resource for you as a parent to feel less alone. And it helps normalize it, particularly as you point out, if no one in your circle or in your community that you know of is parenting a child that is LGBTQ, then you feel even more alone. So all the more reason to try to connect with other parents. And there are support groups. There are online support groups as well. So that's something to consider. If you can't find in New York City or Chicago or L.A. or San Francisco, there are probably in-person groups. But the beauty of the age we live in is that we definitely can connect. So I would strongly recommend connecting online as one of your first steps.
That is one of the beauties of, you know, life right now, is that we're not nearly as isolated. You're not nearly as isolated in Montana if you're facing this than you would have been previously. You'll be able to connect with people, and this is part of the education that I was talking about. And part of education is to be able to process, to be able to think, to be able to hear other people's stories, how they dealt with it, what worked for them, what will work for you, because everybody's story is different. Every child's different.
Let's talk a little about transgender issues. Trans acceptance has really just skyrocketed in the last several years. But from a parenting standpoint, it presents, in particular if you were the foster parent, because you quite frankly don't have the decisions are not yours to make. From a parenting standpoint, because especially if the child has identified as trans before puberty or as they're entering puberty, there are definitely medical treatments that can take place that will make their transition and their ability to live as the gender that they identify with. But that is a hard decision. And let me just point that we have resources at Creating a Family. Not a lot, but we did a wonderful interview with a couple of parents, one of a younger child, one of a child who was in, I think, early 20s, as well as professionals and doctors on the transgender issues. But let's spend a little time here talking about the issues for a parent whose child is, let's say at this point, is pre-adolescent, so there are medical issues to consider. Thoughts on what parents should do to help them and their child make these decisions?
You're right, Dawn. They're really big decisions. And presently, if you're if your child knows, and your child will know, it's not going to be that, because this behavior will have meaning the identity is, your identity also is, I'm a male who identifies as a male. You are a female that identifies as a female. In a trans person, they are a, let's just say, a male who identifies as a female. I know this outside body is not who I am. I am actually, there's a woman inside here. It might be very hard for people to understand that, but that is the reality. Now, if your child knows that at a young age, and you know that too, because you know the difference between a boy and a girl, and you know in your heart, in your mind, that your child is the sex that they're telling you they are, not the sex that you see in the mirror. They call them hormone blockers, and the idea is that when you transition at a later point in time into the sex that you are, it's much easier if you haven't developed as strongly the secondary sex characteristics that come with adolescence, the growth spurts, the hair, the breasts. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that, and all that makes your transition easier, does that mean that you stay a 12-year-old? No, it doesn't. But what it means is you won't be developing as fully as the sex that you don't want to be. And then it makes the transition easier into the sex that you do want to be. If that makes sense, if I've explained it properly.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal to swallow, because the first time I, 10, 12 years ago, when I first like, what? Yeah, it's a concept that you have to wrap your head around. But the more you hear youth talk about it, the more you hear doctors talk about it, it actually makes life so much easier. But everybody has to be on board with it. You, the parent, the child, you have to have a doctor who gets it and gets you and gets your child.
And that doctor needs to be a specialist in these
issues. Yes, yes. Can't be your general GP.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the secondary sexual characteristics, you know, the things of facial hair or hair growth in different parts of the body, Adam's apple developing, breast development, things such as that are happen with during adolescence. And there are drugs that can be, medications that can be given that will prevent the development of these secondary sexual characteristics. And something I wanted to come back to that, Mark, what you said. A number of years ago, we interviewed Dr. Jo Olson. She's an adolescent medicine specialist, but she is the director of one of the largest clinics in the U.S. for transgender youth. It's at the Children's Hospital at L.A., and something she said that it was a couple of years ago that we talked that really stuck with me, because I was thinking, in my mind, I was thinking, what a tremendously huge decision as a parent to make, and what if you are wrong? And you know, this is a life-altering, and you're certainly giving very strong, you know, medication, and what if you're wrong? And she said something that she said, almost always, you are not going to be doing this unless you know, and almost always you will know. And she said, and if we're not sure, we won't do it. You know, that we're looking, there are things, it's less gray than, she was speaking to me, she goes, it's less gray in my practice than you're imagining. And that really gave me a lot of peace. I thought, okay, so there are professionals out there who know what they are doing. And you seek out one of these professionals, and they will help you. It's not you having to make this huge, monumental decision, because, quite frankly, either way you decide, if you don't give the medication, and then you're dooming your child to having a harder time living in the gender that they believe that they are. So either decision is, either way you go, you want to make it the right decision. So anyway, I throw that out, because it's certainly, listening to her, I thought, okay, good. All right, so it's not just us parents having to make this decision. But as you pointed out, Mark, that's not your general GP. And nor is it somebody who just willy-nilly is, if you get the feeling that the person is not really trying to delve deep and to really help you and your child understand the complexities and the weight of the decision, then that's another red sign. You know, either way, one too willing or too hesitant is neither one as you want to go to. So seek out a professional. Seek out somebody who's not professional. I mean, seek out a specialist.
They're always doing research, and it always changes slightly. But you're correct on. Everyone knows it's almost blatant. If there's question, and there's all these other things that we don't have time to get into, but you're going to be seeing a therapist. There's going to be such a level of discomfort in who you are as to who you really are that it's evident to anyone who's really looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that when you're talking with parents who are raising a child who is transgender, my experience is that they get it 100%. As you point out, it's not a subtle thing. They know their child has truly been struggling. And they may have already, now in particular, families are more likely to allow their child to transgender and, I mean, to transition in clothing and things like that. It's less subtle than what we are, I think, that what people who are not parenting a child who's transgender might think. If we are raising a child, either through fostering or through adoption or through birth, who is going to become an adult in the LGBTQ community, it seems that it would be important for us as parents to know some of the issues that people in this community face as adults so that we can prepare our children. And so
I wanted to go back. Like, if you're being treated you're living in the wrong body, there's things that there's a diagnostic assessment that's done, usually at a clinic for gender dysphoria. There's therapy, and then there's triadic therapy, where you're going to actually be living, your life in your desired gender role. The hormonal treatment that we spoke about, this will happen later. Or the hormonal treatment will actually start while your child's an adolescent, a young adolescent, because we know that if they're going to be getting sex affirmation surgery, it makes that whole transition easier. But it's not just because your child says so, or you've seen, my child dresses as a boy, and she's been doing it for a long time. You're gonna have people involved in your life with it, as you said, and these are people that this is what they do for a living. This is their research. It's the medical and mental health community. So, and you're going to do it because you feel comfortable, you as a parent, and you know that it's the right thing for your child. If your child dresses, one of the tells in the sex that they are, they're going to be so much happier. You're going to see it. You're going to see it in your child's face, in their outlook. Now, there might be these other stressors. The outside world might not appreciate it, but they appreciate it, and they appreciate you seeing them and treating them as they want to be treated.
Mm-hmm. As who they are.
As who they are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, I totally agree. Let's talk about some of the issues that adults, even now, who identify or who are in the LGBTQ community, what are some of the issues that these adults face, that we as parents of children who are younger but will be growing up to be adults in this community will potentially someday face? So what are some of them?
Discrimination is one of the big ones.
Yeah.
Can they, depending on their sex, if they choose to get surgery, can they pass? Or will they always struggle with job opportunities because people don't exactly know who they are and they don't want to bother with it? Or there's just discrimination. I don't want that working here. They're not going to say it out loud, but they're going to say it to themselves.
You're speaking of just transgender, but let's expand that all LGBTQ. Of course, some of that could also be applicable to all LGBTQ, but I would hope at this point that we've gotten past some of that blatant, I don't want that working here. I think that would be awkward for me, at least I would hope we're past some of that.
We come across it. We'd like to think so, but you know, it takes a while to work itself through. Dawn, I'm going to be honest with you. Everybody has problems. You know, taking it back to the very beginning of our conversation, the more adjusted a gay LGBTQ person is, the easier adulthood will be, the less issues they'll have to work on their own. If they feel accepted by their families, it's easier to accept myself. It's easier for me to love because I'm not looking. I know who I am. I know what I want. I know what I'm looking for. I'm not going to choose, you know, I might choose one or two bad, but the pattern's not set. The more comfortable we are, the more easier it is for us to maneuver through life. The more we have to hide, the more little things have to be hidden. If I'm very hidden in my life, even though I might identify in my small circle as this, the more difficult work can be. I have to hide this or that. Ah, Dawn, I'd like you to meet son. I'd like you to meet Joe. He's my brother-in-law, so-and-so. Or, oh, so-and-so has a question. Or how come Dawn, you know, all these things are like little stressors that add up.
Yeah. Yeah. And that perpetual adding up, the number of them as they add up, are what weigh our children down. Thoughts on how to find positive role models for your LGBTQ child or youth? Because certainly one of the things that we want our children is to have a diversity of role models of anything they want to do, that their sexual orientation is not going to stop them or stereotype them into anything, a career or interest or whatever. So thoughts on how to help parents who aren't in that community find role models for their children?
I think there's so many good role models now on television, in television series like The Fosters and things of that nature that kids can watch with their families. There's so many gay and lesbian and even transgender characters that aren't pathologically mentally ill, which we used to see before, that they just are. And that's affirming for kids that I can grow up and be totally normal as so-and-so. I think more sports players are coming out, more actors and actresses are coming out, and all that, you know, of course, that's one section of society, but it all drifts down. If I can see myself in someone who's doing well, I know that I can do well myself. I'm not always creating, which was used to be in the past, everybody had to create the roadmap because nobody was there to show them, or if they were, they weren't talking about it. It's my bit, you know, it's no longer just my business. Remember that movement, It Gets Better. You can, you can go and you'll run into people. There'll be blogs of people that will be there to support you, to give you their stories. There's so many good novels out that you can read and understand other people's experiences so that you can better understand yourselves. This is part of what coming out of the closet meant, and it also meant like protecting yourself. We know that if you're a gay man, you need to be aware of safe sex. You need to be aware of your sexual practices. You need to be able to talk about sex so that you can negotiate it.
Yeah, and that raises an issue that a lot of parents want to avoid. But this is no different than talking to your heterosexual child. We want our heterosexual children to also be safe, and that's both our male and our female heterosexual children. So the fact that we're talking about safe sex with our child who is gay or lesbian, there's really no difference. Yes, it's an awkward conversation, and yes, in this case, if you yourself are not LGBTQ, you may need to educate yourself on what it means and what you need to be educating your child on. But it's not fundamentally different. I guess that's what I always come back to.
Sex is always difficult because nobody really, you know, wants to see their child as sexual. They want to see that, you know, they see, you know, that's part of the threshold of developing families, being able to move into that next stage. You know, we want to keep our children young. We see them in a certain light.
Yep. Yeah, you're exactly right. And so but accepting that that's no different whether your child is gay or straight. It's the same awkwardness and it's also your job, and as a parent. Well, thank you so much, Mark LaCava, for talking with us today about the issues of raising or fostering, I guess raising through fostering or adoption, a child who identifies as LGBTQ. Let me take a moment and say that this show and all the resources provided by Creating a Family could not and would not happen without the generous support of our partners who believe in our mission of providing unbiased, accurate information to those struggling to create a family. Some of our goals, sponsors and partners include Adoptions from Shepherd Care. They are a nonprofit adoption agency founded in 1980, providing domestic infant adoption, international adoption from Colombia, and domestic and Hague-approved international home studies. And then we also have Children's House International. They are a nonprofit Hague-accredited international adoption agency with programs in 13 countries. They provide full services, including home studies in the states of Florida, Louisiana, and Massachusetts, Texas, Utah, and Washington State, and they can actually place children with any U.S.-approved family worldwide. I know that people are going to want to get more information about Mark and about the Modern Family Center, and you can do that by going to their website, which is modernfamilycenter.org. That's all one word, modernfamilycenter.org. Or you may want to get information on Spence Chapin, and you can do that by going to their website, which is Spence, S-P-E-N-C-E, hyphen Chapin, C-H-A-P-I-N.org, Spence-Chapin.org. Thanks for being with us today, and I will see you next week.
Everything you're hearing is from the Home Depot, from the baseboards and nails to these throw pillows, even those super soft sheets. Because now at the Home Depot, you can get everything for your bedroom, from wooden nightstands to modern benches. Save up to 25% on select bedroom furniture, plus free and flexible delivery and easy in-store returns. Shop decor now at HomeDepot.com. More saving, more kinds of doing. Valid on select items online only. Free delivery on select items, $45 or more. Visit HomeDepot.com for more information. Everything you're hearing is from the Home Depot, from the baseboards and nails to these throw pillows, even those super soft sheets. Because now at the Home Depot, you can get everything for your bedroom, from wooden nightstands to modern benches. Save up to 25% on select bedroom furniture, plus free and flexible delivery and easy in-store returns. Shop decor now at HomeDepot.com. More saving, more kinds of doing. Valid on select items online only. Free delivery on select items, $45 or more. Visit HomeDepot.com for more information.